Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to I'm Absolutely Fine, the podcast from The Midult that looks at all the glamour and indignity of being a grown-up.
Hello, everybody. I'm Annabelle, and I'm absolutely fine. But I heard myself saying to Emily yesterday, I'm just going to pop downstairs to take my collagen and a laxative.
All the greats.
Which is a sort of terrible snapshot of my life. I've been on so many painkillers for the slip disc. My God, the things that painkillers do to your digestion is a whole nother podcast in itself. And also, this company called Revive, well, they make collagen, and someone sent us like a crate of it, and I just thought, fine, I'll start taking it. So laxatives and collagen. How are you, Em?
Well, I'm absolutely fine, but I also got sent the Revive collagen. I'm really laughing now because there was no note, nothing. It just arrived. And I thought, oh, great. I just started taking it. And then now I'm thinking, my God, if you want to poison women, just send them collagen in the post. Yes. I'll just take it.
Just post them some promises.
Exactly.
And you can take them out.
It's so true. It's a bit like Death Becomes Her, isn't it? It's like, we'll do anything for that kind of promise of a little bit more youth. Anyway, it's a depressing thought. But I tell you what isn't a depressing thought. It's our next guest, Anna Richardson, who, and I'm going to say this with enthusiasm, has seen more naked people than anyone else in the world.
Woohoo!
Thanks to being the host of Channel 4's Naked Attraction. Now, she's also a journalist and a qualified hypnotherapist and recently launched It Can't Just Be Me, a sex and relationship and problem podcast where she answers all kinds of problems about anything from can you be friends with an ex to how do I cope with my partner's depression. More cheerily, we are thrilled to have you here, Anna. How are you?
Well, hello, girls. I'm absolutely fine. But I have to confess, I've had a friend staying with me for the last few weeks, this guy that I know. So he's living with me at the moment. And I don't know him that well. He's a kind of like a fairly new friend. But I've discovered that he eats at least 7 eggs a day. So we get a delivery of probably about 70 eggs a week coming through the door. And they're all stacked up in my kitchen. And I've put him up in my loft room to stay up there. And I've noticed that there's a strange leaking that's coming from his toilet area coming through my ceiling. So I'm thinking, is my system now completely egg-bound because of my friend who just only eats eggs? But not only every night at 10 p.m., my internet goes down. So my internet connection suddenly just disappears. So I'm thinking, what's he doing up there? Not only does he just eat a million eggs a day, not only is something going wrong with my system up there, but now my internet's going down. Is he streaming porn constantly?
Wanking so viciously that he's killing the Wi-Fi.
I think that's what he's killing the Wi-Fi and clogging up.
Fueled
clogging up
by eggs.
Clogging up the waste pipe.
So, wanking and pooing.
I don't know what it is. I'm like, do you know what? Because he's a friend.
Men, eh? Wouldn't happen if it was a girl staying with you.
This is it. But how do you say, so I'm absolutely fine, but how do you say to a friend, listen, about the egg eating and about the Wi-Fi, what are you doing up there exactly every night?
How do you have that conversation?
The mind boggles. Is he only eating eggs? Is that all he eats? Is he on some egg diet?
Well, he does also eat raw meat, and I'm a vegetarian.
I mean, the plot thickens.
It does, doesn't it? I think it's because he's really into his fitness. So he gets up every morning and off he goes to the gym, and he's just very, very fit. So I think it's this whole thing of, you know, mega high protein, you know, raw mints, raw eggs, and then Wi-Fi shenanigans at 10 p.m. I don't know. But how do you say to somebody?
Maybe he's given himself just sort of constant salmonella / dysentery from all the Lytheria. What's it called? That thing you can't do when you're pregnant. All the terrible bacteria that's in all the
Listeria.
Listeria. There we go.
Listeria.
Rhymes with hysteria.
So
very
this
good.
This is a good problem, isn't it? It's like, dear Anna, what would I do if I have a difficult house guest? What do I say to them?
I'm going to ask you. You're both having an answer as well. What do I do?
I mean, this is the thing. Anna's got a problem podcast. We are...
And a problem.
We are the agony aunts for the Telegraph. I think the world divides, actually, into people who are very bored by other people's problems and people who just are fascinated with them. And I don't even think it's nosiness. It's something around, you know, feeling recognised and realising that it isn't just us, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my podcast is, you know, it can't just be me. And we have listeners who write in or leave a voice note with their problems. And myself and a psychotherapist and a celeb who's experienced a similar problem all pile in to try and give advice. And you're quite right. What is the fascination with advice? I've always been fascinated by it. I always used to read the columns in the magazines when I was a teenager and in my 20s. And I think there's something about wanting to fix somebody else's pain, if you like.
Yes.
As you say, it's hearing somebody else's pain and wanting to help them and navigate them through and to say, do you know what? I hear you. I've been there as well. And this is how I fixed it. So I think it's just, and it's a very female thing because I don't think there are not that many agony uncles out there. It does tend to be a sort of female thing, I think, or a feminine thing. The desire to try and heal and help and fix something for other people, I think.
And it's a twin desire, isn't it, to the desire that we all have to be seen and heard and known in ourselves. So if we can try and offer that out, then there's something very nutritious around it for us, for the person giving the advice as well. It's a sort of selfish pleasure as well as one that's trying to help.
Well, absolutely, 100%. I mean, you're quite right that when we, you know anyway, that we mirror people's emotions, don't we? So I guess that when we feel that we've offered some advice or help that has been really, really useful, that's reflected back. And you're right, it's a dopamine hit. It makes us feel better. So, yeah. I mean, I love it. We are nosy. We're journalists and we are nosy. But B, I think that we're kind people and the desire is there to connect. And the desire is there to just try and make this difficult life right now a little bit better.
Also, I think it's really nice when you feel like your world is going to hell in a handcart that you can offer, try and help someone else find a solution. It makes you feel like maybe you're in more in control of your own personal situation.
Yeah, and do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah.
But also, yes, you can learn a little bit about yourself in giving some really serious thought to someone else's dilemma.
100%. I mean, I kind of act, I guess on It Can't Just Be Me, I act a little bit, you know, as the interviewer and the ringmaster, and I allow the psychotherapist to actually give the bulk of the advice because I want to defer to somebody that's actually really got that expertise. And it gives you the headspace as well to think about your own issues and what you need to address within your own life as well, because you're quite right. Even though we dish out advice, we're all struggling with our own, you know, detritus every day as well that we've got to navigate.
Yeah, and thinking about your egg issue, I mean, it reminded me, you know, because obviously I have to bring it back to myself, but it reminded me of what a sort of horrible people pleaser I am. And therefore the idea of like any kind of confrontation, like, makes me feel really uncomfortable. We were talking about, you know, the extreme measures we would go to avoid any kind of confrontation. But the idea of sitting someone down and saying, listen, you know, do you mind not having so many, you know, eggs because of this or whatever it is, and then for them to react in a kind of really negative way, it makes me feel really panicky.
Yeah, even the thought of it is making me feel a bit sweaty.
Do you know what I mean? And so it's sort of like, it just reminds me that that's something that I've got to keep working on, that ability to just be able to, it isn't the end of the world to say, actually, you know what, it's my space, it's really bothering me, for fuck's sake. We should be absolutely able to kind of draw those boundaries without fear.
Yeah, because the Wi-Fi isn't working when I want to, you know, do some work or do something I need to do or watch something, and something is leaking through my ceiling. I mean, those are genuine consequences to whatever is happening upstairs. It's not just you feeling a bit weird. It's not just, well, you know, don't be such an arsehole, Anna. There are things going on that are affecting your house and your life. And yet still you're like, I don't know what to do about that.
I don't. But also, I mean, yes, there are all of those questions, all of the above. But I'm genuinely just curious.
Oh, about that too.
What are you doing?
I mean, it's compelling. Are the eggs all raw, or is it like a fried, scrambled, boiled, poached rotation?
There's a lot of boiled, I notice, and it's kind of like batch boiling. So a lot of boiling. I mean, you know, this boy...
Batch boiling.
This boy, he's fit. You know, he takes his diet very, very seriously. He's got a beautiful body. So I guess, yeah, you know, he's got a batch boil. He's got a batch boil. I don't get involved.
This is an advertisement from BetterHelp Therapy Online.
Okay, serious question. How many times have you been out recently? Actually, you know, scratch that. How many times have you woken up the day you were supposed to go out and felt flooded with dread? How long have you spent praying that the other person will cancel so you don't have to?
And yet, just as we're avoiding people, so many of us feel really lonely and more tired than ever, particularly now the days are getting a bit longer and you think, how am I going to have the energy to go out into the world?
Our social batteries are very flat at the moment, and that can make us feel isolated, which can lead to trouble. And in my experience, therapy has helped me track my best energy sources and helped me better identify what leaves me feeling depleted.
So if you're thinking of starting therapy, why not give BetterHelp a try?
It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a registered therapist and switch anytime for no additional charge.
With over 1,000 therapists in the UK already, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise.
Listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/midult. That's better, HELP.com/midult.
BetterHelp, because sometimes the best thing to do is acknowledge that we are not, in fact, absolutely fine.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Speaking of beautiful bodies.
She said the word body. She left herself wide open.
I'm so sorry.
Because, of course... Naked Attraction.
Oh, yes.
I mean, talk about compelling. And I suppose, am I right in saying that the concept for the show, of anyone who hasn't seen it, is that everything happens backwards?
So basically, it's dating in reverse. For people that haven't seen it, where have you been? Yeah. But it's dating in reverse. So we start off with people naked in six pods in a studio. And we have somebody who wants to pick a partner, but they're picking their partner naked first. The idea being that... Normally when you go on a date, you meet somebody with their clothes on, you really, really fancy them, you get them home, they take their clothes off and you are literally aghast at the horror before you. So we thought, why don't we do it the other way around? Let's pick them naked first and then see if you get on.
Then they can be horrified by the personality.
By the actual personality. And their clothes. So we reveal the first half goes up to the waist. Then we go up to the neck, then we reveal the head, and then we hear their voice and we go from there. So yeah, it's literally dating in reverse.
There's something weird about revealing the head rather than revealing the face, isn't there? I thought you'd say we reveal the head, like, yeah, it's sort head. Of somehow mummified.
Like consequences.
Yes, it's like real life consequences.
It is real life because the head never matches the body, the bits of the body that you've seen before. And that's the joy. I mean, there's so many joys to Naked Attraction, but part of the gameplay and part of the joy with Naked is when you get to the head or hear them speak and you're like, Jesus Christ.
I mean, oh,
you must have
goodness.
Learned so much about the sort of, I guess, about the sort of disconnect, like you said, between how people present themselves when they're fully packaged and how they are actually when they're completely naked and vulnerable.
100%. I mean, it never fails to deliver on so many sort of comedic levels. And also actually some very emotional and very, you know, eye-opening sort of educational levels as well. But yeah, I mean, in the first instance... You learn, don't you, that looks are completely deceiving, and so much, we learn so much from how somebody dresses, how somebody speaks, all of those unconscious biases that we have, and that's stripped away in Naked Attraction. So it's interesting. But then on a sort of an emotional level, there's something very moving about somebody coming onto the show that's naked and saying, I have a stoma, for example, or I have a disability, you know, I'm in a wheelchair, or I've got a hidden disability. And their answer is, at what point, if I were going on a regular date, would I reveal to somebody I've got a stoma, you know, or I have one leg? At what point do I do that? Whereas at least with this show, you can see what I've got and yeah. we go from there. So it is, I mean, it's a really beautifully nuanced show for all its comedy.
I always wonder what would drive a person to go on telly completely naked, because I don't think it is extreme body confidence, is it? I mean, one of the brilliant things about the show is it really, really isn't Love Island. It's all shapes and sizes, thank God, because that's who we all are. But what do you think motivates people to come on and want to try and meet someone like this and also do it in front of the nation?
We ask ourselves that question
every series. Thank God they do.
Every series, and every series we are inundated with people who want to do it. I think that there's several reasons. I mean, look, let's be frank. You get some people who are the chancers that recognise that they're like, well, hey, you know, I might get a shag out of this at the end of the day. You get the big show-offs that just think it's really funny that they can then sort of go into work with the lads and be like, hey, you'll never guess what I did on Friday. You get the people that frankly are there for self-promotion, that maybe they're influencers or they've got a bit of an online business, you know, as a gamer, or, you know, and they're looking for followers. You get some people like that. And then you get people who genuinely are going, well, why not? I've tried everything else. You know, why not go for this? And it's a bit of a laugh. And you also get those people that are going, I'm trans and I want people to be educated about what I look like, or I have a disability and I want that to be recognised. So there's all kinds of different reasons for why people go on.
Have there been any Naked Attraction marriages?
Not yet, but I am waiting. We do have a couple, and I want it to happen. I'm putting it out there for anybody listening. I want the naked wedding. We do have a couple from series two that are still living together, who are amazing. And I know that we have, I think, a naked engagement between a gay couple. And yeah, we've got people who are still seeing each other, but not the wedding yet. Not the wedding yet.
What do you think you've learned about attraction from Naked Attraction, about what really brings people together? You know, because sometimes people say, oh, it's chemistry, or it's the banter, or it's shared values, or what have you taken from this radical way of people, you know, colliding?
I think that when we start to reveal the bodies, you definitely have that beginning point of what does somebody find attractive. So you will have people, let's say that we reveal up to the neck, you definitely have that visceral reaction in terms of, oh, I don't really like guys that have got a really, really hairy chest. So you kind of weed out what you personally find physically attractive. But then when you reveal their face and then their voice, it all changes again. And everybody says that. They're like, oh my God, he's got gorgeous eyes. Look at the way he's looking at me. Oh my, it's making me blush. God, I really fancy him. And then when they speak, it's like, oh, I love the way he talks. He's got a really funny answer. So really, you kind of run the entire gamut of what you find physically attractive about somebody. And then you've got that spark at the end, you know, that chemistry at the end.
I tell you what I always find a really compelling moment is when it's as the chooser, I suppose, you know, it knocks people out of the equation, says, right, I'm going to say goodbye to the guy in the green pod, or I'm just going to say goodbye to the girl in the yellow pod, or the person in the, you know, blue pod. Is then, in order to, as a consolation, you know, goodbye. Oh, what a shame, goodbye. They have to have a naked hug.
I know. And we encourage it. We love it. We encourage that every time. It was so difficult during COVID because they obviously weren't allowed to have that awkward naked hug. I mean, the other thing that I love about the show is that when somebody eliminates, say, you know, the girl in the green pod, that when they then end up picking the person that they're going to go with, you can see that often they're like, fuck, I've made a real mistake with that. I really should have kept the girl in the green pod. So, you know, there's all kinds of, we're talking about, could we mix this up and mix up the gameplay that you would be able to bring somebody back? Because, yes. Yeah, that happens quite a lot.
Can they ever then get hold of this, yeah, you know, late lamented green pod?
Well, no, they can't at the moment. But this is what would be a sneaky twist on the format, is that you could go, do you want to bring back the red pod? Yes, I do.
Oh, and of course, mixing it up.
The other thing you've got is that when you've got the two people at the end that are waiting to be picked, often you'll see them standing there going, oh, Christ, because they don't fancy the picker. So you can just see them going, oh, no, oh, no, I've now got to go on a date with this human being. Yes, so, yeah, so that's interesting.
Thought that. I know, isn't that interesting that we're so, I mean, we're so fixated about
being chosen.
Yes.
You know, the joy and privilege of being chosen, that it didn't even occur to Emily or I to think, well, you know, maybe I've got some agency in this.
Yes, exactly. Like, rather than just standing there naked.
Trotting
I mean, that's
off
how you
like
feel.
A sort of dog. I mean,
like a prize.
The other lovely moment that I love after the naked hug is when they walk, they go, oh, thanks so much, and they walk off, and they're filmed walking off, and their little bottom walks like into the
yes, their little spotty bottoms, absolute every time. Love it.
And the other thing that I always notice is how un-naked people are nowadays in terms of the level of tattoos and piercing, speaking as someone who only has pierced ears. I mean, I always think it's rare on Naked Attraction to see an actual naked as the day you were born body.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I mean, this has been commented on by the whole team. And maybe it's to do with the generation, because obviously we are Gen X, aren't we? So yeah. I think that the Gen Zers, the millennials and the Gen Zers, it is just de rigueur to be inked up and have tats. So you're right, we rarely see somebody that hasn't been inked or have a tattoo. And
I mean,
it's
almost radical.
Yes, yes. Do you know, I was talking to somebody the other day who was saying exactly that, that, you know, he was going, I'm going to be that top percentage that has got nothing on my body. I'm going to be the exception to the rule. Yeah. And there is something about that. And, of course, pubic hair as well. You know, where
have all
the pubes
gone? I mean,
remember
that?
Are they completely gone?
Pretty much. I mean, you'll occasionally...
For men and women?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So you'll occasionally get like maybe a little bit of a landing strip. But by and large, they're either completely gone or they're really, really trimmed close.
I wonder if any of them have a Hitler moustache, which was always your wax of choice in your 20s, wasn't it? Time for a Hitler moustache. I remember you taking your knickers down one night when we were having dinner in my house.
At a party, yes, exactly. At a dinner party, I did. Well, I needed to show everybody my Hitler moustache.
Yeah, it was in the early days of Brazilians, I suppose.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, God, the early days, the original.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly, exactly, which is why I know. I never had a Hollywood, though, just the Hitler.
Have you never had a Hollywood? The worst thing. I mean, almost like slipping a disc. It's just awful.
Oh dear, it's
so undignified. So now you've obviously know everything about what it is to be naked in front of the world. What have you learned from doing your podcast now? What have you learned of the kind of are people's biggest problems? What are people mostly writing in or
the recurring themes today?
Do you know, there is no sort of recurring theme. I think it's just life problems, like all of us at the moment. I think that what I can see, though, what the team can see, is a real need for connection. So, I mean, I guess taking outside of the podcast and just in general, I get the sense that post-Brexit, post-COVID, certainly post-COVID, we know that we've got a mental health crisis. We know that kids in particular are really suffering. We know that divorce rates have gone up. So there is a need, I think, for us to calm down and connect again. I still think we're suffering from the effects of isolation, and that's interesting to me. I think we're all a lot more anxious than we used to be.
I think it's true, and it's we've known about the need to connect. We knew about it pre-pandemic, but we came out of the pandemic so exhausted that it becomes harder to motivate yourself to try, and it's like the gaps got wider and we're too tired to bridge it.
Yeah.
You know, it's a strange thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think as well, like, we're sort of, it's a difficult relationship between what we now think that we want. So, for example, working from home, and the sort of the realisation of the horror of the commute, and the realisation of, you know, how expensive it is actually to kind of, you know, have, I don't know, get a lunch in central London or all of those things. But at the same time, of how actually ultimately unhealthy it is to sit in your room on Zoom all day.
Yeah.
So how do you square the competing feelings, right? Oh my God, I don't want to get on a tube. But at the same time, if I do get on a tube and go into an office, I will like have those kind of water cooler moments or whatever it is with people, actual people.
Yeah.
But at the same time, aren't people awful? And please can I get away from them?
And
I'm so tired.
And yet I feel much less tired on the days I have to put on my, you know, fully functioning human woman outfit and get out the house and be around people all day. Those, you know, the old-fashioned days we used to, and you leave the house at 8 and you're back in the evening. The prospect of it is horrifying. The reality of it is quite energizing.
It's actually,
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
I totally agree with you. So I've started working, I'm working on another show for Channel 4 at the moment about the slimming jab, Ozempic. And there is something really great about getting up, getting your clothes on and doing that commute into the office and being with a team. The idea of it, as you say, is just ghastly. But actually the reality is like, oh, I've really enjoyed this. This is energizing. It's connection, it's purpose, it's motivation, it's movement. And I think the danger is, you know, we're doing this now, aren't we? Sitting over Zoom, doing a podcast, sitting. There is no movement. And we've had that with the pandemic for 3 years. It's not good.
No, it's not good. And actually, I'd rather do work outings than sort of go to a party or something. Mm. That's terrifying.
Mm. Yeah, I think people have lost the art of socialising for sure.
So I went to a party the other night and someone made a speech and said, I'd like to thank the sponsors of this event, Ozempic, as a joke.
Oh, really?
What have you learnt about Ozempic on the way? Because it was a sort of trickle that became a flood, right?
Yeah, so we are still in pre-production at the moment. We haven't started filming yet, so we're still in our initial research phase. But I was looking into it anyway myself at the beginning of the year. I went to go and speak to a couple of doctors about it because, you know, I'm menopausal, I've put weight on, I'm pre-diabetic, both my parents are diabetic, so I'm at a greater risk of diabetes. And I just thought, God, you know, maybe this slimming jab thing's the thing. Maybe that's what I need to just drop that dress size and help myself out a bit. But I don't know, I've been, from the people that I know that are on it, and my God, so many people are on it, aren't they? I don't know whether it's sort of possibly put me, I don't know. The side effects are tricky for some people. And also, it's not a magic bullet. You know, you can't be on it long term. And when you come off it, you put all the weight back on. So I don't know. I'm torn. But and yet it is fantastic for obesity.
It's interesting to me what it's going to do to the way that we perceive bodies. Because, you know, this world where we're trying to break free from this sort of hideous, you know, patriarchal jail where thinness is prized above all other things. We're trying to, but none of us feel greater, you know, great in ourselves, really. Emily and I were discussing that. We try to, but it can be hard. And it's interesting because if thinness is associated with self-denial and discipline and also a sort of genetic superiority, if you can just inject it, then will it in fact lose its luster and it will be less sought after? It'll be interesting if this injection does something societally in that way, won't it?
Yeah, definitely. And we were talking about the absurdities of, I was remembering that when I was at my thinnest, and not in a fun way, that you know, I would weigh myself and I would realise, I would make sure that I was weighing myself without any jewellery, completely naked.
First thing in the morning.
You know, definitely after a poo, definitely after a pee, you know, not having eaten anything, you know, and this sort of, like endless cycle of like, you know, well, I must absolutely strip myself down to my kind of, you know, most basic part, whatever, in order to kind of be my thinnest. And it's such a mad, it's such a corrosive thing. And I was thinking about, you know, the idea that actually, you know, for some people that, you know, Ozempic might be freedom from that awful, like, you know, worry, constant thinking about that stuff, you know, that sort of terrible sort of, you know, relationship with food, etc., which is so destructive.
Well, that's what someone I said to me who I spoke to about it. She said it is freedom. All my life I've had this, you know, corrosive relationship with food because I've been the one that, you know, that I've been the one that got fat. whatever. And every time I've got thinner, I've got fatter again. It's been constant. And this, I don't even think about food anymore. So,
but what's going to happen when she comes off it?
Well, I don't think she's planning to.
And what does that say? I mean, yeah. You're going to be on it for the rest of your life?
Well, that's what, from what I've read about it, it says, you know, if you want the effects to continue, you've got to stay on this thing.
And we interviewed the brilliant, and you will love her book, Elise Lunan. Her book's called On Our Best Behaviour, and it's about how the kind of seven deadly sins have leashed women into this kind of obedience thing and the price that we pay to be good. And there was a survey, and it was something like women were willing to lose 10 years of their lives if they would be thin. So it's like, it'd be like, I'd rather die 10 years earlier than be more than a size or whatever. But it's an extraordinary kind of brutalization of women that's happened over the years about weight, hasn't it? It's just like so toxic.
So my doctor said to me, look, I'd kind of really rather that you just crack on with eating properly and exercising first before we even consider going on a slimming jab. And just, you know, stop freaking drinking so much, frankly. So, yeah. do you know what I mean? But when I went to go and see my trainer said to me, and this phrase really stuck with me. And he said, women would far rather hear, you've lost weight, you look great, than I love you. And I thought, that's so true. You've lost weight. You feel so much better when someone says, God, you look good, you've lost weight, rather than, oh, I really love you.
Yeah.
That's so heartbreaking, and it's so true. It's exactly, women would rather
it's
die.
Not, it's
than
not
be...
I see you. It's a, I see thinner you.
Yeah,
I see a better you.
Yes. Oh my God.
And
okay.
maybe what you're hearing when you hear as well when you hear you've lost weight, you are now more lovable.
You're a good girl.
Exactly. Exactly. You're more lovable. We can approve of you. We look up to you. And you're a good girl because you haven't let yourself go.
Because you haven't let yourself go. I know we interviewed the brilliant Alex Light for the podcast. And she was like, what do they think is going to happen? Women just unleash themselves and just sort of eat what they want or whatever. Don't feel like, what do they think is going to happen? Of course, nothing. Because actually, ultimately, a lot of it is actually just body chemistry, right? It's just metabolism. It's just, you know, it doesn't really matter. I think it's incredibly depressing, actually.
It is. I mean, it's really complex. It's a fascinating subject, and it is really complex because obviously there's research to show that certainly when it comes to obesity, that obesity could be classed as a disease, that actually genetically you may be 40 to 70% controlled by your genes when it comes to obesity. So there is a degree of, you can't help it. But I don't know. It's a complex argument because I worry about the public health message of we can just medicate eating too much, being overweight. Because let's face it, I'm willing to bet that the people that you know that are on the jab and the people that I know that are on the jab, they're not obese. They're just, they're people that just basically want to drop a dress size.
Yeah, yeah.
The other really... I listened to a really interesting documentary on the food program, and they were talking about this experiment that they'd done in Australia, and they basically took people to the bush equivalently for like 3 months, and they were either sort of classified as obese or had diabetes or other conditions that are to do with like being overweight or, you know, food related issues. And they took them to the bush and they fed them as you would if you were, you know, living in the bush. So it was like kangaroo, the stuff that they killed, the people were not the killers, if you see what I mean. But they, you know, crocodile, kangaroo, like nuts and berries, seeds, whatever. And the idea was to keep them there for 3 months. Within a month, they had all got rid of all of their symptoms, either lost so much weight or were no longer testing, you know, positive for whatever it was, that they stopped the experiment because it worked after a month. Now, obviously, it's just not practical to kind of have us all living in a kind of sort of bush. But it does mean that ultimately, like, if we could change the sort of ultra processed food, if we could change the diet, if they could make, you know, those things rather than finding the solution medically, but rather actually punishing the companies that are creating this ultra processed kind of, you know, situation, it'd be so much better.
100%.
Practical.
I mean, yeah, I mean, that is the public health message, isn't it? That we should be lobbying government, we should be speaking to the food industry and lobbying the food industry. This is about re-education, it's about how you eat healthily, it's about exercise, it's about movement, it's about mindfulness, so that we don't get to being overweight and then obese in the first place. So I think it's really interesting, the idea that pharmaceutical companies are going to medicalize our nation and the idea that this could become as common as just taking an everyday pill.
Yeah.
You know, wherein lies the personal responsibility? It's interesting. It's a very interesting debate.
It's a strange thing because it's either incredibly optimistic for the 40 to 70%.
Yeah.
Or it's totally dystopian.
Yes, I know. It's really odd.
Is it a horror film or is it a fairy tale?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Really good point. Yeah. I'll be nicking that for the documentary. Thanks.
You can have it from me to you. So when does it come out?
Well, we are just in production at the moment. So I think it'll be coming out probably sort of autumn time, I think. It'll be coming out soon. Yeah. Yeah.
And then when's the next series of Naked?
Well, we're waiting to hear. So I'm hoping that we will start filming again next year. It was put on hold for this year because we've got basically too many on the shelf. But yeah, hopefully, I'm just, God willing, it'll be back next year because it is quite literally my favourite show.
Well, we love all the stuff that you do. And that show particularly could be incredibly awkward and almost unwatchable. But there's something about your lightness of touch that makes it fucking funny and completely fascinating and heartfelt, as you say. Thank you so much for coming to see us.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been brilliant.
What a joy. And please, please come back soon.
I would love to. Thank you so much for having me. And now that we've worked out that actually we're basically neighbours.
Neighbours!
Quite literally, we'll be coming round and you will be seeing me soon. So
thank you, girls.
Good luck with your egg situation.
I'll let you know what happens.
You can't not.
Thank you, girls.
Desperate joke. Thanks, Anna. Lots of love. Bye.
You've been listening to Annabelle Rifkin and Emily McMeekin of The Mid-Alt. Our book, I'm Absolutely Fine, is out now. If you like what you hear, please rate, review, and subscribe.